My name is Laisa Duclos, a senior at Choate Rosemeyer Hall. With recent news about the transition of Caitlyn Jenner and shows like Transparent and I Am Jazz, all in which deal with the trials and tribulations that come with being transgender, many have wondered what it is that can lead to the disagreement of one's gender identity and their assigned sex. For years, many have sided with the nurture argument that believes gender identity is a product of your environment. But recent studies have shown that gender identity is in fact biologically determined from hormone levels received during prenatal development to differences in gray matter concentrations to even differences in brain microstructures. Today, I will be joined by Nell Shaper. Nell identifies as non-binary and is a gender advocate at the prestigious Choate Rosemeyer Hall. Pronouns are they, them, and theirs, and will be referred to as such throughout this interview. So Nell, lead me through this. If I say anything at any point that is wrong or offensive, please let me know how I could have rephrased it, because I want to learn as much from you as possible.
All right.
I guess okay. We'll start with my first question. My first question would be, first, I want to learn more about yourself. Tell me who Nell is in a nutshell.
Who am I? Who are any of us?
I know.
I'm a junior at Choate, and I do a lot of tech theater. And I like to draw in my free time, and I like to read, and yeah, and I'm non-binary, just like you.
I guess my first question would be, with the definition of transgender, everybody defines it in a different way. It can be seen as somewhat of an umbrella term. So personally, what does being transgender mean to you?
Well, as far as getting a definition, I personally and many people define being trans as not identifying with your sex assigned at birth.
Yeah.
So, like, trans is not identifying with that, and anyone who does identify with their sex assigned at birth would be cis or cisgender. And for me personally, I consider myself trans in that from like a pretty early age, I guess, just like where I grew up, there was a pretty heavy distinction almost on my being a girl.
Yeah.
And so then when I like, I guess came to the realization that I wasn't, it made a lot of sense. And it also like it seemed like a definite, this is what, I was like told I was, and this is what I am.
Yeah.
So in that capacity, I consider myself trans, although there are many non-binary people who don't.
I guess not. You said that you came to the realization, was there a moment necessarily, or was it just something, like, explain how that came to you, because everybody's experience is different.
Right. Well, there wasn't a specific moment, it was sort of a progression, in that I was aware of, It was sort of once I came to Choate, because at home I only knew that there were two choices.
Yeah.
And I was always told that like I was this one. So I just sort of went along with it. I was like, yeah, sure, like I'm a girl, but I'll go off and do my own thing.
Yeah.
And sort of like when I came here, I was exposed to like new stuff and just like I think I found the term like gender neutral, which is pretty clunky.
Yeah.
Although some people people use it as an identity. And I sort of, I jumped onto that somewhere around my freshman year. And then, as I worked through it, I found, better terms to
define.
To define, yeah. And describe.
That makes sense. I've been doing a lot of research on, the DSM, I don't know if you know about it, but basically it's like the diagnostic statistic manual. Mm-hmm. And it's been used in so many ways to diagnose people with mental disorders. And at one point, the DSM put gender identity disorder in there. And after a lot of lobbying from a lot of gender advocates and said, there's nothing wrong with me, and that putting it as a disorder gives it the connotation that there is something wrong with me. And the DSM later like changed it to gender dysphoria. To you, what do you think would be the difference between labeling gender identity disorder and gender dysphoria?
Well, calling it a disorder is like pathologizing. It makes it sound like it's something, like something wrong and something to be cured. And dysphoria is more specific. Dysphoria can actually describe more than just physical dysphoria, or what's generally called gender dysphoria.
Yeah.
Which is discomfort with your body. And there are other types. There's, I think it's called mental dysphoria, which is where you misgender yourself. In your thought process. Yeah. Because that's like, I don't know, like, sometimes my thought process comes through, like what I think other people are thinking about me. And then, like, I'll misgender myself.
Yeah.
Speaking from, like, another person's point of view. And it's uncomfortable because then, like, it sort of leads into what's called social dysphoria, which is the awareness that other people are misgendering you when, like, they see you, like, walking around.
Just correct me if I'm wrong. So, like, right. the mental dysphoria and social dysphoria and gender dysphoria, are they different or in the same, as in, like, do you think as a transgender person you go through all three stages of dysphoria, or can one person go through mental dysphoria and not social dysphoria? How does that work?
Well, absolutely. Well, everyone's experience is different. Mm-hmm. And I personally don't go too much physical dysphoria. Yeah. Because I am non-binary, and there's not really, like, a set... There is sort of an ideal that's, like, that androgynous, like, skinny white person. Exactly. With, like, a flat chest.
Yeah.
And, like, colored hair, which I have, but not quite the... And so I don't get physical dysphoria that much because, I also just have, like, a weird disconnect with my body. Like, I don't really, like, I'll look in the mirror and be like, sure, like, that's me. Just, like, go along with it. So, and there's some people who are trans and don't experience dysphoria at all. Mm. Maybe just, like, mild, like, discomfort.
Yeah.
Most people say that they don't experience dysphoria in the sense that they don't experience physical dysphoria.
As in being uncomfortable with your body.
And your body and what you're supposed to look like, but it also does include, like, social expectations.
Yeah.
So it is hard to separate the three, types of it's hard to separate generally types of dysphoria out because they are still the same concept. But, I more commonly feel, like, social dysphoria.
Where you feel like other people, when they see you, they automatically assume your pronouns and your gender identity and everything.
Because, like, I look like a girl, which I don't really see, like, when I look in the mirror, which is sort of what I was going back to saying. Like, I don't really see it, but I can see how other people see it.
I see. That makes sense. I guess my next question would be, this ties in with the entire point of this podcast, is do you personally think that being transgender is biologically determined?
Personally, I'm not super sure where I stand.
Mm-hmm.
And biology is sort of a sketchy subject in trans discourse because a lot of the times when people bring in biology, it's as a, not belittling, but like...
Abnormality, sort of?
More of like a, like, this isn't what you really are. Like you're biologically X, Y, or Z.
Mm-hmm.
Which can be, like, undermining. Like, when people say, this is so-and-so, they're a woman, but they were born X, like, they were born this. Like, that's just, like you're undermining their identity right after you say what it is.
Yeah.
Which isn't cool. And, like, sucks. Yeah. Or like in social spaces, like, you know, there are women's colleges that will admit cis women and trans men, but not trans women.
Yeah.
Which is just super, yeah, like that's a bit of a mess. But yeah. Because trans men are quote unquote biologically women, which they're not. But, there's a theory that's sort of gaining traction, on the internet especially, that, like, how, sort of similar to how people consider gender, like, not real, like it's a social construct that we use to, like, navigate interactions, sex is also, like, heavily enforced in, medicine especially, in that, like, not only are, like, your sex and gender the same thing, but also the fact that, like, certain things belong to certain genders, in that if you don't have certain things and you are a certain gender, you need to, like, have surgery to get it fixed. Which, like, some people use it to cope with dysphoria, but
yeah,
it's also, like a pressure. But as far as the causes of being trans, sometimes incorporating biology into it can add sort of a born this way
kind of thing.
Sort of thing onto it, which is generally fine, except the way that I find it's used a lot of the time, especially like most primarily in like sexuality discourse, is like, oh, you know, like, they're born this way, like, they can't help it, and sort of the implication that if we weren't born this way, then we wouldn't want to be this way.
Yeah.
That, like, if we weren't born this way, then, like, it wouldn't be something that was okay. And sometimes, like, not everyone is born this way. Like, some people don't realize it or don't feel, like, certain ways until they're, like, way later in life, or sometimes it comes about as a result of trauma or something, and those are all still perfectly valid identities.
Yeah.
But as far as specifically biological theories about how it comes about, I think that they could be valid. I think that right now I'm not completely certain, but there are a lot of theories.
Yeah.
And they're not like, they're concrete in certain cases, but not every case.
I can share a few with you if you want.
Yeah, sure.
Well, from my research, I found just a couple of these points. Was one of them would be that transgender females, they have longer repetitions of an androgen receptor. So basically that receptor is activated by the binding of testosterone, and it's sort of necessary in terms of, like, development of your primary and secondary male sex, like, characteristics. And they also found, like, they found that with that receptor, it has problems, like, binding the testosterone. And there is a, like, genotype called the CYP17, and it sort of acts upon, like, the estrogens. And that's more linked to transgender males, they say. And another thing that I found was that transgender males, they tend to
just
have...
Just for, like, clarification. Sorry.
Yeah.
When you say... I don't know. I'm just trying to follow what you're saying. If you're talking about, like, people who identify as women, you might just want to say trans women. Because when you include, like, male and female, that's especially when it gets sort of confusing, because if you're saying, because a lot of people say, like, transgender females, they can mean, like, people who would be considered, like, quote-unquote biologically female, instead of, like, trans women, which are people who identify as women. So I don't know, I just got a little lost.
I think what I meant was by transgender females, I think it meant transgender women.
Okay.
So yeah.
You might just want to say women.
Yeah. So transgender women.
So trans women had the androgyny that wasn't binding testosterone.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
So it couldn't really bind testosterone, mm-hmm. which sort of is necessary with the primary and secondary sex right. characteristics. And as for transgender men, they have a gene variant, the CYP17, mm-hmm. and that it's very similar to having male controls rather than female controls. So okay. Those are just a few pointers that